Hey, y'all. Welcome to Off Color Commentary, your go-to podcast for all things media, culture, and politics. I'm your host, Keisha, and today we've got a special roundtable episode for y'all, all in honor of Marvel Spider-Man's 60th year anniversary. Can y'all believe it? 60 years. Before we hop into the podcast, let me give you a little bit of an intro on our guests. First up, we have award-nominated writer and producer Jeff Trammell. Jeff has worked on a dozen shows, including my personal fave, Cartoon Network's Craig of the Creek. He's also writing and executive producing Marvel's animated Spider-Man Freshman Year. Joining Jeff, we have author extraordinaire Preeti Chibber, who's written for everyone from Star Wars, DC, and Marvel. Her upcoming book, Spider-Man Social Dilemma, is now out for pre-order, linked below. And last but not least, we're joined by data scientist, environmental advocate, and co-host of the Middle Geeks and Spidercast, Tuara Saleh. This intro took long enough, so let's jump right into the roundtable. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for joining us today. I already did our intros, but if you want to give yourself an introduction real quick, let's start with Jeff. Let's go in alphabetical order.
I'm Jeff Trammell. I am the head writer and one of the executive producers for Spider-Man Freshman Year, as well as the former supervising producer, head writer, and at one time staff writer for Craig of the Creek.
Okay. He's underselling himself. He's worked on a dozen things.
Well, you know, I don't want to eat up the whole time talking about all the shows I've worked on.
It's fine. We'll link the IMDb below. All right, Preeti, you're up next.
Hi, my name is Preeti Chibber, and I wrote the Spider-Man book called Spider-Man Social Dilemma that comes out this summer. So that's why I'm here, because I'll always say yes to talking about Spider-Man.
Yeah, honestly, I've read the book and I've took notes. I have 3 pages worth of notes in here. So we're going to talk about it. Okay. Tuara, you're up next.
Hello, everyone. My name is Tuara Saleh. I am by day, I am a data scientist, but in my spare time, I am a podcaster. I am a writer. I am the co-host of The Middle Geeks and on the Nerds of Color podcast network. And I'm also the co-host of Into the Spider-Cast, where my co-host CJ and I discuss anything and everything related to Spider-Man, Spider-Woman, Spider-Girl, and everything in the Spider-Verse. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm really honored to be here.
Of course. When we were planning this, because we started planning this last year, when we were coming up with a list of anniversaries and all the events that are happening, and I knew for a fact, I was like, Preeti needs to be here, Swara needs to be here, Jeff needs to be here. Unfortunately, we're going to invite Carla, but she couldn't make it, so we're going to have to bring you all back. But let's dive right in. The first thing we always need to discuss when it comes to Spider-Man is with great power comes great responsibility. That is so known. It's been used everywhere, even outside of the Spider-Verse. And even in Preeti's adaptation, I can see a little buildup happening there. So let's talk about it.
It's quintessential Spider-Man. It's like you don't necessarily have to say the words, but that's who he is. And so it has to be this like thread that comes through of with great power comes great responsibility. But I think with Spider-Man, it's that it's in a really accessible sort of way because he has this other side of himself that just consistently is either making the wrong decisions or messing up or his life is hard or whatever. That it's not just because he has great power. His great power is not the reason necessarily for the responsibility. It's like, despite his circumstance and despite these like things that happen in his life, he continues to try to do good and be responsible with his power.
Wow. You said that so elegantly that I'm like, how do I follow that? But it's true. It's the kind of thing where, you know, that quote means so much, so many people. And I think a lot of people do view it as that, oh, well, he's a superhero. That's his great power. But like his great power, that's not a thing Ben knew about when he said it. That's not a thing that Peter always has had. So the great power is just also being a good person and carrying those responsibilities through and helping May and doing like everything he can to just make the world around him a better place. So the great power, great responsibility, I think is so timeless because it applies to so many of us. We all have that great power to try to make things better around us and help people and just put out what you want to see into the world. And Peter and Miles and all the other spider people are like the perfect avenues for that.
And it has everything to do with Peter Parker being the essential everyman, of someone who has this amazing power thrust upon him. And he thinks the world is his oyster. He can do whatever he wants with it. He's going to make money with it going wrestling, but it's with the tragedy of Uncle Ben's death, or spoiler alert for Spider-Man No Way Home, the death of Aunt May, that inspires this. When they say to him directly, with great power comes great, there must also come great responsibility. And it's in those moments where he realizes that he has to carry on what it is who these people who are essentially his parents have taught him. And in that way, it's similar to Clark Kent's Superman with Ma and Pa Kent, of instilling that love for humanity and responsibility towards humanity. And it's really an extraordinary thing to think about, because when we do think about power, when we do think about, especially in the world today, when we see so many people who have power who don't use it for great responsibility, that's the sheer contrast. But Spider-Man, and as you said, Jeff, all the other spider people always have this through line of great power comes great responsibility. And it's always so inspiring. And I love Spider-Man, the spider people so much.
Yeah, honestly, I think when you really get into the Spider-Verse as a whole and you learn about the level of power they have, the level of responsibility they take on, and how aware of themselves, like all the spider characters are, it becomes more apparent how aware they are and how they navigate the world, especially if you read all the comic adaptations where it's like you figure out how much Peter specifically strains himself. There's the adaptation where he gets like his body is taken over, and Doc Ock is like, oh no, he's holding himself back 24/7. Like reading that, you're like, oh, okay. No. He's well aware of what's happening here.
Yeah. Even in drinking a cup of coffee to not grab it and make it explode, he's always got to be on edge of like, okay, this is how much power I can output to hold this cup. Yeah. That's such a great point of Peter's constantly aware of himself in a world that is not aware of him, making those decisions. And I think the wrestling is always a good point where it's like, oh, I'm going to wrestle, I'm going to make money. And then what happens? But even putting him in high school where it's like, oh, he can't play football. He can't do anything that like could help him shed this kind of persona that he has. When everyone sees him as, oh, this kind of nerdy kid. He could become the star jock. He could become an athlete. He could be like the center of attention, and he actively avoids that because he knows that it's not right. So it's just stuff like that, seeing something in a character like that is that every man or every person, and everyone can fit in those shoes. Even if you are the star jock, you still have those moments where you feel like Peter. And I think it's why that character has been around for 6 years and continues to like have people who want to be like Peter Parker, because Peter Parker is such a, it's interesting because he's such a fun developed character that anyone can see themselves in, just by the pure virtue of not being the character everyone sees in a weird way.
No, it's true. And I love thinking about that idea of like great responsibility or a great power with responsibility, and the side of Peter that has to consider his impact on the world around him. Cause I don't know that we usually talk about that side of the equation, but it's just as important. Right. And that's something that's so wonderful about him as a hero, and hopefully something that people can use to inform their own lives and their own decision-making. Cause it is such a thoughtful way to consider yourself as part of a community, and how you are not an individual, you are part of a collective. Yeah. Like, it's really wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, there's one specific thing that comes up is, and this is a minor spoiler for Preeti's book, Spider-Man Social Dilemma. There's a brief blurb where Peter's really considering like financial stress that he's under and how he can help. And he thinks about, oh, if I start a GoFundMe for Spider-Man. And then he's like, no, that'll be a logistical nightmare. And I'm like, no, but he had to think about that, because he could be like, he could do like the boys. He could be getting sponsorship deals. He could be getting that Casper mattress brand deal, you know, promo code. But no, he's out here like getting a job, working for the Daily Bugle. He's trying to do it the quote unquote right way. So it's not just a matter of like his superhero abilities. He tries to take that like approach in all facets of his being.
And he always does it with some... Oh, sorry, go ahead, Preeti.
No, I was just squealing because I loved him so much.
I just love him so much, especially because the world keeps throwing everything at him when he gets his new job at the Daily Bugle. There's something I loved about the book, Preeti. Like, we all know the contentious relationship J.J. Jonah has with Spider-Man and Peter, and getting to see that in real time when Peter's like, I'm going to do this the right way, but nope, J. Jonah James is just going to make him out to be a villain, and he has to deal with that.
And it's so, it can be like even innocuous moments where Peter's just having a snack in the middle of the road and Jonah's like, he stole that hot dog. Peace, Your Honor. This is the most ridiculous moment.
It's classic Spidey, right? Yeah, I can't classic. Wait to see what, I know before we started recording, we're like, we can't talk about this, but I can't wait for freshman year. Like, I can't wait to see what hijinks he gets up to. And I know that you can't tell us anything. I'm just saying.
There's a lot of hijinks and they're fun. And I feel like because we can't talk about my thing and I don't want to spoil Preeti's book, which everyone should get because it's so friggin' good. I feel like I'm doing this dance of, oh, I want to talk about Spider-Man, but I can't. But there's so many other things of Spider-Man we could talk about. But these are cool. But since we're on the subject of Preeti's wonderful book, I do want to just say that, like, one, get it as soon as you can. I pre-ordered it back in December and I got to read it early, and I still have my pre-order set because obviously I want it. And it's so good. It's so fun. There's so many, like, wonderful, I don't know about you, Preeti, but the hard part for me for writing Peter is, like, all the science-y jargon because he's such a smart kid. Yes. Yeah. And
it's so hard.
I am not a science. Luckily, I have a bit of help on that front. And there's so many things in the book that you broke down where it's like, oh, this, huh, I feel like I'm learning while I'm reading this book. Or just like the way you delve into, I don't want to spoil, but one of the villains, I feel like you do such a great job of breaking down their powers and really explaining things in a way where I was like, oh, I have a new appreciation for this villain. Which is a cool thing to
do. It read. Was really good.
Yeah. Especially like after 60 years of Spider-Man. It's such a cool thing that, like, you're still bringing fresh takes and new explanations to these villains. And it was just really cool.
Oh, that feels, I can't even tell you how good that feels to hear. I feel like, yeah, you must understand, like, the science is so difficult. And, like, when you're writing a character who's, like, in many ways we all identify with Peter, but he's a genius. Like, yeah. He's so smart. And I was like, I'm not. Yeah. I am not that smart. And so my editor kept asking questions about the villain that everybody, Sandman is in it. Like, that's on the copy. So, you know, Sandman's in it, but there's, like, another facet to this that is super, like, I was like, I can't believe I have to watch 10-minute YouTube videos explaining to me how this, like, scientific function works. But then I just have to watch it 3 more times because I still, like, don't understand it.
You're learning as you're writing, which is great.
You're also like, I hope no one ever calls me on this. Like, because I can't explain it after I write it. Like, the knowledge is gone.
It's gone. I cannot tell you. You know, copy what? Editor, a nightmare.
I'm going to make a note of that because those are questions I usually ask in interviews where I'm like, so you came up with this specific way, like, how, because I am a STEM person, like, that little neuroscience brain, it'll jump out and you'll be like, okay, so tell me about his powers. Like, what is his web fluid and, like, all of that stuff. But it's no, like, the way you brought in, like, the science element of, especially how he's navigating the world now is, like, with smartphones and there's all this technology around us. And we're going to get into it later. His mentor in Social Dilemma is, like, an electromagnetism, like, genius. Dr. Shaw is, like, he's in the book. This is not a major spoiler, but the man's a genius. And there's sections where he goes on into these, like, brainiac tangents and Peter's just staring at him and you're like, oh, yeah. He's still a kid. He's still a kid.
That, I was like, you and I are on the same page, Pete. I'm not a 16-year-old, but same.
No,
it's also something else I really enjoyed about the book was the interpersonal relationships that you showed Peter having with obviously Aunt May, but MJ and the newer characters. I'm not spoiling anything. I really love Maya. I really enjoyed his conversations with Kayla and Robbie, and particularly, like, the characterization of MJ in this book is really fantastic, and how she gets into her own. Okay, this is spoiler territory, but she gets into a misunderstanding with Maya, and I really liked how relatable that was, because so often we can have interactions that cause friction that aren't so conducive towards friendship, but then, you know, you work it out and it just felt like really relatable. And that's also what Peter goes through. And that's so many Peter Parker Spider-Man stories. And yeah, so really great job, Preeti.
I mean, that was heavily influenced, I will say, by the Spider-Man PS4 game, because it's one of my favorite renditions of MJ, of Mary Jane. She gets her, like, I was adamant from the beginning. When I pitched this book, like, I was working on, I think I got the initial email about potentially doing it in March of 2019. And we went like back and forth for a long time. And then at San Diego Comic-Con, like at some party, I was like, to like a Marvel licensing person, I was like, what if I wrote like a Peter MJ rom-com? They were like, yes, do it.
I love that.
Mary Jane has to have her own like story that's going on, her own needs, her own wants, her own independent of what Peter is doing, but obviously within the scope of the plot of the book, which is what I think the game does so well.
Yeah, that's one of the things I really like about the newer adaptations. Like, if you like throwing it back to Into the Spider-Verse, Peter B. Parker, like, he's basically split from his partner because she's like, I can't do this, like, there, this is too much. And it really highlights, like, again, those like interpersonal relationships that Peter has to navigate, whether people know he's Spider-Man or not. Because it's not like you can just drop off the face of the earth because there's a villain nearby. There, like, if you're on a date and something happens, your date's gonna be like, hey, you left me in the middle of a disaster. What's up?
Peter's like, I've been off world for 3 months. I'm so sorry.
At least with the blip, he has an excuse. He could be like, yeah, I was blipped. Sorry about that.
It's such a good point, though, because, you know, and that's a thing, another thing in the book where it's like, when you're on a date with someone and something goes down and something scary happens, you just disappear. It makes you look like the biggest coward in the world. You're like, oh God, something happened. I gotta go, bye.
I gotta go. Like,
zip away. And then Spider-Man shows up and you're like, not only are you a coward, you miss Spider-Man. Like, what's your deal, bro?
That's part of what makes Peter so relatable, of having these various responsibilities or things he needs to take care of that sort of deter him from fostering his interpersonal relationships. And that's so relatable when you just have the world sort of, it feels like it's crushing down on you and you can't focus on having the full extent of a friendship or relationship that you know that you need and want. And it's, it feels very frustrating. It feels like you're letting people down. And Peter feels like that all the time. Those are all the best Spider-Man stories, where he's letting Mary Jane down, he's letting Aunt May down, he's letting Harry Osborn down. He's like, and that's like the tragedy and the drama really of Spider-Man, and why like we always flock back to this character. There are so many incarnations, for example, of the Peter, Harry, and Norman Osborn story. I think in particular, the recent Spider-Man animated series did it very well. And I will say, it's the most I have ever liked Harry Osborn. Like, finally, I thought, oh, this is a Harry I actually like. Great. Still, Norman Osborn is the worst. That's like the one rule across the Spider-Verse. Norman is the worst. So, yeah, it's just like, but still, like those various incarnations about those drama of his interpersonal relationship, of how it like relates back to him being Spider-Man, how it all feeds into each other. That's how it's really well done. And again, you do that really well, Preeti. Sorry, I got to keep giving you praise.
No, I love it. I'm not going to say no. I've literally been like in a silo with this book for like 3 years. And so now that people are reading it, I'm just like, I hope they like it.
Oh, listen, when I was like prepping for the interview, I was like, I saw reviews on Goodreads. I know I put my review on Storygraph earlier. I was like, we're just everywhere throwing flowers. But we just touched on it, like his interpersonal relationships, and specifically there's the factor of like how he's, there's the culpability of the people he loses in the books. That's pretty heavy. So, you know, like the first iteration, Uncle Ben dies. It's heartbreaking. And then in No Way Home, spoiler, Aunt May dies. That, it still hurts here. It still hurts. And in Preeti's book, I'm not going to give spoilers, Spider-Man is not without death. There's always someone dying around him. But there's always the thing of, he feels responsible because he wasn't able to get there in time, or he wasn't able to save them, or something else happened. And that adds that extra bit of trauma that gives the story flavor every time. And I'm just like, how do you not relate to someone like that? Because we've all experienced that loss and having to move on. In some cases, there's survivor's guilt. That's so real, right? That's such a universal experience for people.
Yeah, I think the threat of grief for Spider-Man makes him such an important hero, that because the grief doesn't define him. It's just a piece of it like that. I should have written down the name when I saw this question, but I didn't. But when after Johnny Storm's like death in the comics, there's that issue where Spider-Man is talking to Johnny's nephew, one of Sue's kids, whose name I can't remember because I didn't write anything down. But they have this conversation about grief and loss, and it's really beautiful coming from like one person who went through it and one person who's currently going through it. But there's still a layer of like hope and joy to it. It's so, you know, I love Batman comics. I love the Bat Fam. I love all of it. And that's just it's like the polar other side of how a comic book character might deal with grief and let it consume him. And I like completely become the personality of who he is. Peter lets that grief inform his choices, but it doesn't completely define who he is.
Yeah.
You know, oops, sorry, I don't want to cut you off. My apologies.
No, I was talking about how that's something that we saw on screen in No Way Home, because there's that moment where he's so close to snapping and the other Peters come in and they're like, hey, I made that choice. It's not one you'll be able to live with.
I was going to say, too, in that there's a comic, No One Dies, where Peter's just had enough death. And he's like, now I must make sure no one dies, period, which is an impossible task to take on. And everyone around him knows it. And deep down, Peter knows it. But he's pushed himself to this point where he's had so much loss where you're like, I can't handle more loss. So I have to do whatever I can to make sure no one dies, even if that kills me in the process. And it's like, that's the kind of character that Peter is to a fault. Like, he's gonna try to save the day, even if it means putting himself in danger. Like, we all saw No Way Home. We know what extents he'll go to in order to keep everyone else safe. And that's more than you can ask for a hero. At the end of the day, that big sacrifice play, that end game moment, that we all see, we all know, and that's Peter to a T. He's almost like he's too heroic to be a hero, because he'll always sacrifice himself for the greater good.
And what I love is that it's more so in recent times, it's presented as this tragic flaw, right? Because they allow us to show the other characters having agency. Like, Aunt May makes a lot of her own choices in that movie, which is amazing. Mary Jane makes a lot of her own choices. I feel like we've come a really long way from my least favorite trope, which is the like, I can't be with you because I have to protect you, right? Peter makes that choice not for the usual reason in No Way Home. It's not because he's like, I have to protect you. It's literally, this is a collateral damage moment. If I don't do this, the world will end. So it still allows us to have that tragic flaw, but without taking away the agency from these other characters, which I really appreciate.
So a few months before No Way Home came out, we actually covered on the podcast two of the, let's say, divisive comic runs. One More Day and One More Moment in Time. We covered it with me and Preeti's mutual friend, James Whitbrook of IO9. And essentially, No Way Home is sort of a redux of those comics, of Peter going to Doctor Strange, asking him, can you please change like what I've done and change the world, et cetera, prevent this death or whatever. I realized like throughout reading these comics, even though I was very frustrated by the end result, they're really beautifully written, honestly. And there's so much great exploration of grief and love and reflection of the effect that Peter's career as Spider-Man has had on his loved ones. And I will say, like, for One More Day, it felt like the culmination of that story arc should have been, if you take the Mephisto out of it, as like Mephisto is mostly out of it, despite what many people online may want. It seems like the natural conclusion should be Peter, you messed up by revealing your identity, and this was the consequence of Aunt May dying by being killed by one of the Kingpin's goons. And it would actually be important for him to accept that and carry on with that and understand that you need to be more careful, or you need to, you know, accept that this happened and use it to fortify yourself. But then again, Mephisto comes in and is like, I will make sure this never happened to your aunt if you give me your love, your marriage, this like convoluted way of like making Peter divorce. You know, it's okay. Peter and MJ, they can have a divorce and then get back together. It's fine. You don't have to change reality. But anyway, but still, like, what I really enjoy about reading is like, the thing is the grief, the sacrifices, all these things that happen to Peter, they happen to us in life. And that's the hardest thing to accept about grief, about loss, is that you do need to accept it. You do need to let it be a part of you. You'll never be away from it, but it's just a part of life ultimately. And even if you have the powers of Spider-Man, or going to my DC fandom, the powers of Superman, or all the resources of Batman, or powers of other heroes across all these universes, it's something you still need to accept and carry with you. And that's what all spider people need to do.
I'm waiting for Sarah's change.org position. Let Peter Parker get a divorce.
Oh, no, listen, I'm a Peter MJ like shipper. I do not want to. I'm saying if they are going to go that route,
it would allow, like, they have to reconnect.
They have to reconnect. It would allow Peter and Felicia, my second ship, to get together.
But here's the thing. Okay. Brief aside for ships with Peter Parker, wholeheartedly agreed. MJ, Pete, Endgame, all the way. Because as much as I love Felicia and Peter, she's too good for him. He like can't handle her.
Okay, fair. You know, since we were talking about all of these sacrifices he has to make, especially when it comes to his relationship, one thing I really love about Tom Holland's portrayal of Pete is that he gets to be selfish. He wants, like, because he's a kid.
Mm-hmm. And like, he's still learning. He's learning that lesson of with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah, like, it's a matter of, you know, when Dr. Strange is out here making his hand gestures, his Naruto jutsu, trying to reset the universe, and then Peter's just like, oh, and MJ, and Ned, and May, and you're like, no, this is, like, he's trying his level best to have it all.
Yeah.
And that final moment where he's like, I have to let it all go for the better of the universe, you're like, ooh.
It's a three-movie wrestling match. That's what they did. I can't get over it. How smart. Of like making a trilogy that's an entire origin story for a character that everyone's like, I never need to see a Spider-Man origin story again. This is the way to do it. You respect it. You respect the story. You manage to give us something new and still get us to the character. Like, the end of No Way Home, like, that's on the way to my favorite cut, like Peter Parker, who is like early 20s, doesn't have his crap together, like about to get kicked out of his apartment, but still trying to be the best superhero he can be. It's so, I can't get over it. It's so good.
The thing that really messed me up, especially towards the end, is like when you see that little thing of the GED prep book and you're like, oh, he walked away from MIT.
Yeah.
And the Daisy kid in me, who's like academic validation, I'm like, I don't know if I could have walked away from a degree like that. I like every now and then I'm still like, hey, I really walked away from med school. Did I make the right choice? So I was like, ooh, okay.
I do like that in your version, he's like the Strange, like, make everyone forget Peter Parker except the MIT admission.
Yeah.
Like, let them remember
me. I won't lie. I would have been like, it's fine. Let the admissions person, just let them remember me.
One lady.
That's how you know Peter Parker is not a brown person. Yeah.
True. It's fine. We won't hold it against him.
Prabhakar would have never.
No, imagine if Miles had to make that choice and he can hear his parents in the back. Imagine if Cindy Moon had to make that choice.
Yeah.
Imagine if Kamala Khan, who is our generation Spider-Man, made that choice. Never.
Listen, we're not going to start on Kamala, because the amount of times I've already hit up in, like, Marvel Studios, like, hi, could I please, I will pay for the flight myself, please let me come to the premiere.
When I found out Fawad Khan's gonna be in that series, I like lost my mind. It's like, I will do anything.
Listen, if I can get us to the invite, we're taking pictures on that carpet. I'm going to show up in my, I'm going to steal my Masaris and just show up.
That's so sweet.
I love it.
It is. Yeah. But specifically, since we're talking about, like, we just touched on the other spider people, one like common thread that binds them all is the concept of mentorship. And we saw it in No Way Home Again. We got the other, like the other part, Peter Parkers came in, and so did their mentors. And they had their little reunion moment with their mentors. Like Octavius talking to Peter and be like, you've grown up, and you're like, oh, damn.
Yeah. Just him calling him dear boy. And you're like, oh my God, he does call him.
When he's like trying to be better, I was like, just leave me here with my crying.
Honestly, like that's, Octavius is my personal favorite villain, mostly because I remember watching that movie in theaters as a child. I also ruined someone's date, unfortunately, because I fell asleep halfway through, but like that's a different part. But like that iteration, and then also in the Spider-Verse, we get Catherine playing Doc Ock again. It's so good every time.
So good.
He's and then in Social amazing. Dilemma, we have Dr. Shaw. And in case y'all didn't know, Social Dilemma is one of three books. So we got more books coming. Mm-hmm. There's more mentorship to be developed there.
There is. Ooh, it doesn't go where you expect. I'll say that much.
In a good or bad way? That's what I want to
know. It's a Spider-Man story. We know which way it's going.
You'll see. Ouch. I know. What do we know about Peter Parker? What are fundamental truths? Nothing will ever go right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like we said, grief. It's a common thread.
But that's also like, can I just say, as a kid growing up, like especially at the end of Kesha, you mentioned Spider-Man 2. I remember watching Spider-Man 2 as a kid in the theater, and I was resigned at the point when you said to MJ, we can't be together. I legit believe that. I legit, oh, so this is probably how they're going to end it. But then when MJ makes her own decision, runs to Peter, I was like, oh my God, he wants to be happy. I'm so happy. It's like, that felt like such a reward because we empathize with this character so much. And yeah, and then Spider-Man 3 happened. And I have no idea what happened.
What happened?
Spider-Man 3?
I don't.
I'm not no idea. Yeah.
The only one I know is the way I made up. Yeah. No, we're not talking about that. I will say though, like with specifically with the MCU, like No Way Home version, is we see a lot of like redemption moments. We just talk about Tobey Maguire's Peter and Doc Ock having their dear boy moment, and Octavius going out of his way to help. And then there's also little moments just seeing Happy and like Peter at the grave site, and you're just like, I don't think I can recover from this. It's so much. And then we had Andrew's Peter save MJ. The way I was screaming in my seat. Like, I'm pretty sure I ruined
goosebumps
every time.
So I got to see No Way Home early. Perks of the job. So I saw
it. It's research.
Yeah. I saw it in September. Yeah, I know.
Okay.
Oh, how did you last? I hated it.
It was the worst. I was like, well, now I can't say anything to anyone about anything.
Did you get to bring a plus one at least that you could discuss the movie with after?
No. I saw it on the lot by myself in the room with a person who was just like playing it and making sure I wasn't like tweeting it.
It's like they were giving you state secrets for no reason.
Yeah. And it was like, I left and I was like, did I dream this movie? There's no way this movie's written. Like, what? Because when he caught her, like, the feels. And funny story is, I left that. I got home and my wife was like, so how was it? And I was like, it was fantastic. And she was like, are the other Spider-Man in it? And I just went, no. And then I just lied to her for 3 months.
Channeling some serious Andrew Garfield.
Big Andrew, yeah. And then we saw the movie and she turned to me and was like, you lied to me. And I was like, yes. And she was like, thank you. Because you can't ruin that. Like seeing them come through those portals is such a, like, yeah, it's such an insane moment. But yeah, like seeing Andrew, like, Andrew's redemption is so powerful in the sense that, like, he doesn't even say anything. Like, everything is on his face. And then you just, like, you, like, it means so much to you if you've seen those movies. And, man, what a scene. What a wonderful scene and a wonderful movie. Like, it's crazy to think about that movie, because when I think about it, I'm like, oh, this movie's, like, great. It's fun. It has all these amazing moments. And then you're like, there's so many heavy moments in that movie. Mm-hmm. There's so much death. There's so much just, like, yeah. But it's, at the end of the day, it's still a movie about hope, and it's still fun. Mm-hmm. And, like, only with Spider-Man can you do a thing where you're like, everyone's going to forget you and you're going to have to start over. And it ends hopeful. Mm-hmm. Not just like with him, like, sitting in an attic, like, hunched over, like, oh God, what have I
done? Right? That's what Pete's going to do.
Peter. Yeah. It's always like that hope, that second chance that, like, he's always going to make the most of it. And mm-hmm. that ending of him in that new scene, it pumps me up so much.
Yes.
It's just, it makes the other two move. Because I am not the biggest, like, I get really frustrated with, in those first two movies, Peter's reliance and then, like, the necessity of Iron Man being over the whole movie. Like, I love Homecoming. I love Far From Home. But I was always like, let us have a Spider-Man movie. And then No Way Home comes out and just completely recontextualizes those first two mm-hmm. movies to a point where I'm like, oh, it's just one long movie. I'm just going to treat it like one long 9.5 hour movie about Spider-Man. It's so good.
Honestly, I would have paid to see that.
Thanks, Jeff. These three films were about, like, that learning of with great power comes great responsibility. As you were saying earlier, Jeff, like, Spider-Man, he could be the popular jock in this case is Tony Stark. Okay. And mm-hmm. like, you know, being an Avenger and, like, famous. And Peter at the end of Homecoming realizes, no, I need to be, like, the local friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. Far From Home, it's like, I think that frustrates me about the film. I share the same frustrations, Preeti, with that, like, connectivity to the other heroes of having to have, like, the events of Endgame affect Peter a lot, along with, like, his friends and family, them talking about the blip and everything. But still, like, it's through these two films, like, gradually getting to this point of tragedy that mm-hmm. is the catalyst for him becoming the Spider-Man we all know and really love. And I am very intrigued to see how, like, the next film, which is still, as we understand, taking place in the MCU, and how that unfolds now that there is no more Tony Stark Iron Man. R.I.P. Tony, you won't be affecting this plot anymore. Sorry, that sounded mean.
I was just going to say, Keisha, if you did watch all three movies as one big movie, it would only be slightly longer than the Batman. So.
You're not wrong.
Listen, I will watch 9 hours of Robert Pattinson eating a single blueberry.
No, like, literally when I reviewed Batman on TikTok, I was like, there's two things happened in this movie. His eyelashes were really prominent the entire time. God knows how. And I just
natural
had to pee.
Beauty.
I had to pee the entire time. Why? Like, we need to bring back intermissions.
I agree with that.
Yes. Y'all remember when you could leave a movie halfway through? Like, there was a black screen. They're like, hi, go stretch. Get some popcorn again.
That's Bollywood, man. No, Bollywood gets it. Bollywood will put that intermission in. They're like, listen, if you're going to sit through this 3.5 hour long movie, we recognize you will need the bathroom. You will need snacks.
No,
here is your intermission.
That brings back a specific memory of watching the first ever Spider-Man, because I was like, I was a kid. I went with my cousins and our parents were in the theater across, like, the little projection thing across from us watching Devdas, which is like a classic Bollywood movie. So during intermission, I ran and all I see is, like, the most dramatic Bollywood crying scene. And I'm like, OK, I'm just going to go back. Let me take my ass.
Devdas is a great movie.
It is.
Shah Rukh Khan is maybe the best crier, like, in Hollywood, in entertainment media, I think, personally. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think anyone can do Shiny Eye like Shadow Khan can do, like quivering lip, shiny eye. No one
okay.
can do it.
Give me a fan cast. Shadow Khan's joining the Spider-Verse. Who is he?
Oh, Dr. Shah.
Okay. Send him a tweet. Let him know.
I love it.
Yeah. It's, and as far as this stuff, like, I'm not to pivot back to the actual point of this conversation, but as far as I touched on it, how, you know, Tom Holland's Pete decides to, like, be the, he walks away from that little conference that Tony puts on and decides he wants to be the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. And specifically in Spider-Man's Social Dilemma, you see that even more because there's, like, again, minor spoiler, I'm not going to give you context at all. There's a scene where he's like sitting on a ledge and someone hands him a cup of coffee. And they're like, if you need a refill, let me know. I was like, that's perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That is so perfect.
It was really important to me to bring, again, that like community aspect out. Like, this is not an, like, Peter, yes, is an isolated superhero in terms of the like larger superhero verse. He like operates where he operates. He does what he needs to do where he needs to do it. But he has a, there's a community that benefits from having him there. And so like, it was like really important, I think, to show that. And that's something that I think comes through in a lot of the Spider-Man films, and especially in something like Homecoming. Like I love that montage at the top of Homecoming where he's like trying to be a good hero and he's just like messing up a lot. But people are still like the do a flip is like one of my favorite moments. It's such like, it's so like iconic Spider-Man of just like interacting with the city, interacting with the people of the city. Like, you need that for Spider-Man.
Giving someone directions.
Yeah.
Maybe bought me a churro because I helped, you know, like, yeah.
It's so endearing.
Yeah.
It is. It really is. And it's also like how it plays into like, you know, the running joke of like, if Spider-Man were to live in Kansas, he wouldn't be able to swing around.
Yes.
And even in Social Dilemma, there's that scene where he's talking about, oh, I wish there were like sky rises here, but let's not gentrify the neighborhood.
He's like, no, no, no. Like, we don't need that here.
He's like, it's fine. I'll take the subway.
He just needs to web zip more. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also like, again, because we talked about this earlier, like the scientific aspect. In Social Dilemma, you brought up how being a superhero affects his body. Like, you talked about, like, swinging around, it hurts his shoulders, there's, like, strain happening. Mm-hmm. And even in No Way Home, there's that scene where, like, they're basically giving each other, like, adjustments standing on the scaffolding.
Reference to Spider-Man 2.
My back.
No, it's something that was funny was bringing Spider-Man powers to prose was a little bit of a challenge sometimes when you're like, how do I say shoots the web in a different way?
Yeah.
You can't say the word shoots the web three times like in one paragraph. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's that thing of, you know, like in romance novels where they say the same three lines over and over again to like try and express that something happened. He smirked. Like, who's smirking that much in real life?
Hot guys.
Yeah.
Okay, no. So we need to wrap up because I know that you guys have other things to do. Like, Preeti has two other books to write. And I will be DMing you. And just being like, hi, do you need a beta reader? I'm right here.
Just write them in Google Docs and just send us links and we'll just read them live.
Listen, you know I'm a STEM person. If you need help, I'm right here. That's all. Free of charge, letting you know.
I'm not going to lie. There was like, when you have to go back in, like I wrote the second book, I turned it in like December.
Okay.
And going back and trying to remember how I like said things worked, I was like, I don't remember how this happened.
You're reading it. You're like, who wrote this scene?
Who wrote this book? Like, I know it wasn't me.
That's my favorite thing. Like, anytime I'm on the Off Color account, like scheduling tweets, I'll see your writing updates and you're like, I should be writing. Edits are due. How do I do this? And you're like, yeah.
I know. Whenever I don't know how it is for you, Jeff, but like whenever I get to end like the end of something, I'm like, how did this happen? Who did this?
Yes. It's called 4 Years of Craig of the Creek.
This is why we all love Spider-Man, because Peter Parker would be exactly the same.
Mm-hmm. It's that Dr. Shaw blank face moment.
Yes.
By the way, Jeff, personal question. Can you confirm if Craig is a Spider-Man fan?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Okay.
He might like Miles slightly more, but he's definitely mm-hmm.
Fair.
Definitely.
I feel like Peter would like Miles slightly more.
Yeah, yes. I think that's right.
Ooh, no, that's actually a great point, because, you know, we just got the news that, like, the Beyond the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse just got delayed. Mm-hmm. Did y'all know that they're planning to do 240 characters?
So, by the way, can I just jump in? That was a little clickbaity. It's just 240 yeah. background characters. Like, yeah, they're it was animating in the background. Just actually, Chris Miller himself had to come out and tweet, like, saying, hey, it's not 240 main characters. It's only in the background.
Single word of dialogue.
Guy checking mail is one character.
We just see, like, Spider-Man Noir just, like, for 3 seconds. One character there.
Oh, my God.
It's even then, like, the amount of appreciation and respect I have for, like, the animated movies, and this might be a hot take. I prefer animated content because I feel like there's a lot more like, creative room for you to, like, really express yourself. Mm-hmm. That's a personal beef I have with everything being, like, live action. But that's a conversation for another time. But, like, the fact that, again, even if there are 240.
You're not going to open up that discourse now, Keshav.
Listen.
I was like, it depends on the fandom we're talking about.
Oh, my God.
I just got in a fight on TikTok a couple of weeks ago talking about, like, Steven Universe. So let me not. Oh, I just closed that barrel. Let me not open another one. But it's so amazing. And then I know they did say they're hiring at least, like, not hiring, whatever contract, full-time, whatever they're doing. There's like 1,000 people being brought on for the project in whatever capacity. It's so expensive. It blows my mind every time.
Good for them taking the time they need to.
Yeah.
I'm like, I had 3 main characters and I needed a program to list out all the plot points to make sure I was doing everything in line. So, like, that's incredible.
Oh, yeah. No, on the editorial side, when you figure out, like, how many people are involved, editors, people illustrating covers, people reading, it's a lot. Like, I haven't had that much experience in writers' rooms or, like, collaborating with writers, but, like, I'm sure Jeff has his own experiences with, like, the amount of people that work on a show.
Yeah, I think there were, like, maybe 60 on Craig, just in the building for Craig, not counting, like, sending overseas for animating and, like, voice acting and, like, everyone else involved. Just, like, props design, boarding, writing, and all that was just for Craig, that 60. So probably hundreds of people.
Man, it's amazing.
The best way to figure out who's working where is hopping on LinkedIn, and you just see, like, the job postings, Walt Disney Korea, mm-hmm. Walt Disney Ecuador.
Why is that,
Ecuador.
Like, Keisha, why is that the most auntie thing you've ever said?
Because I've been on LinkedIn. Listen, I'm trying to, like, get on my LinkedIn influencer. Listen, I'm trying to, like, get on my LinkedIn grind. I've avoided for so long, and now I have to, like, network. Like, okay, I guess I actually have to do this myself now. The struggles of not having a 9-to-5.
I just want to say, as someone who's only, like, a fan of all these works, animated and comics and writing, so much incredible work goes into creating the things we love, and all the creators, writers, animators, storyboard artists, all of you do such incredible work and deserve all the praise, recognition, compensation, everything. And I just want to say how much I, as a fan, like, appreciate it so, so much. And y'all are the best, and we would have nothing without you.
Yeah, that's the perfect note to wrap this up on, honestly. Like, props to all of y'all. Writers, editors, animators, like, assistants working on sets, everyone, honestly. It's amazing. And I'm going to open up the floor to y'all. Breathe the last words, anything you want to say before we wrap up?
Please pre-order my Spider-Man book. I would very much appreciate it. It's called mm-hmm. Spider-Man Social Dilemma. Please get it from your independent bookstore if that is what you would like to do. You can use bookshop.org if you don't have a local bookstore. It comes out July 22nd. And yeah, I hope everybody really enjoys reading it.
I know they will. The amount of effort you put in, it shows. Jeff, I know you said you can't talk about freshman year. Is there anything, any other projects you want to mention? Anything that people should know about?
Yeah, I'll say watch Craig of the Creek on Cartoon Network and on HBO Max. They just dropped a bunch of new episodes for season 4, and I was happy enough to be able to help out on those before I left for the other thing I'm going to plug, which is Spider-Man Freshman Year, whenever that comes out on Disney Plus. Don't know when, don't know where, but keep an eye peeled. And lastly, most importantly, please pre-order Preeti's book, Spider-Man Social Dilemma. It's so good. You will love it. And if you buy it, I'll sign it. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, no, please. Yes, you have, please, if you see Jeff and have my book, please ask him to sign it.
That's in a couple months, you just see like Jeff walking around Barnes and Nobles with a Sharpie.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, no.
I'm looking for people.
They're like, sir, did you write this book? And you're like, no.
I read it.
We have an agreement, the author and I.
It's an understanding. It's no. Honestly, I already have my plan. I did it recently. I walked into my local, because Canada doesn't have Barnes and Nobles, unfortunately. I walked into my Indigo Chapters and I took like a stack of books that I loved, Kei Kai by Vasily Patel. And I was like, we're just going to put this on this little desk right here. I walked away. I was like, that's it. That's my good deed.
For moving products.
Like, you're welcome. It's free of charge. Hire me if you want. These pre-order links are going to be in the bottom.
Does Sara have anything to plug?
Yeah.
Yeah. You haven't, like, you didn't even talk about your podcast all that much. Talk about that.
Thank you, Keshav. Well, I first say, Craig of the Creek is amazing. We have HBO Max. You need to watch it. It's just like, it's not just for kids. Everyone can enjoy it. It's amazing. And by the way, Jeff, I remember like joking there about the 90s being an old time. I felt attacked. Thank you so much for that.
That's the writer being like, if I'm miserable, we're all miserable.
Exactly. Once again, I am a co-host of the Middle Geeks podcast. There we discuss anything and everything related to Southwest Asian and North African or SWANA representation in media and give our takes on it. Currently, we're covering Moon Knight. Overall, we're really loving it. And most importantly, relevant for this podcast, I am a co-host of Into the Spider-Cast, of which Preeti has been on a couple of times. Yes, and we had so much fun having you, and we'd love to have anyone else here come on.
Let's just move this group over to that podcast.
That's the next Zoom.
We'll just do this whole thing again.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Why not? Easy enough. There, my co-host EJ and I discuss everything related to the Spider-Verse. So please check us out there. And you can find me on social media. My Twitter handle is SpiderSwars. And my Instagram is at Swarzy_8. And I will also say pre-order Preeti's book, Spider-Man Social Dilemma, is amazing. You will love it, not just if you're a middle schooler, but again, any age. It's amazing. A Spider-Man fan of any background, or this will make you a Spider-Man fan. This is the indoctrination to spider fandom. So you need to get this book. It's amazing.
Spider Agenda. We love to see it. And I'm not going to plug Off Color. If y'all found us, if you're listening, you know who we are. We got the automated messages playing. But again, pre-orders Preeti's book. And she didn't talk about this as much, but she is a podcast host herself. Right. DC Geek Girls, check them out. Everyone's stuff will be linked below, but thank you so much for tuning in, y'all, and we'll catch you next time. This has been an Off Color production.
Make sure you follow us everywhere at offcolor.org. That's color with a U.
Check out our Patreon for exclusive content
and leave us a review while you're here.
Until next time, we're off.